Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Thanks for downloading the latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com. Today, we catch up with activists trying to restore democracy in Pennsylvania.
As I was walking a ribbon of highway, I saw above me and in the skyway, I saw below me a golden valley. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.
I met Adam Eichen last October on his book tour with Francis Moore LePay. They co-authored Daring Democracy, and he's following through on his dare. He is aligned with a group of Pennsylvanians who are trying to clean up corruption in Harrisburg. They're fighting for a constitutional amendment to end gerrymandering with an independent redistricting commission, and they want to put the lid on corruption, campaign finance. There's a gift law that's problematic. You'll find out more as we talk with Adam Eichen, Rabbi Michael Pollack, and activist Rachel Murphy coming up in this podcast. It's made possible by listeners like you who support my work with your subscriptions. People like Ethan Knox, Eric Boll just renewed his annual subscription. Thanks, Eric. Along with Steve Wazensky, Judy Holloway. I invite you to join their ranks. Visit peterbcollins.com. Click the menu button, pull it down, click Become a Subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page, and zip. You can choose a level of support that's comfortable for you. Adam Eichen returns to the Peter B. Collins podcast. He's co-author with Francis Moore LePay of Daring Democracy. That's the manifesto. Now he's walking the walk. Joining me from Westchester, Pennsylvania, just across the Delaware River from the cradle of democracy, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Adam Eichen checks in today. As I mentioned, he was here in October with Francis Moore LePay to talk about their book, Daring Democracy, Igniting Power, Meaning, and Connection for the America We Want. And Adam and Frankie, as Francis Moore LePay is known, met on the Democracy Spring March. And this is kind of Democracy Spring 2.0, as Adam and a group of activists are trying to restore democracy to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Adam, thanks for being with me today.
Peter, it's my pleasure. It's so glad to be back. I'm so glad to be back on.
Now, you're at a Unitarian Universalist church in Westchester, and this is, what, stop number 5 on your barnstorming tour of the state of Pennsylvania?
Well, actually, so this is the 5th one this week.
Oh, wow.
But I believe this is actually the 8th. I tried to go over all the numbers earlier today, and it's the 8th. We did 2 in January, and then we're doing, so far, this will be our 5th this month.
Mm-hmm.
So there's another, I think, 11 more, or 13 more. That's quite a bit. We're going across the entire state.
And you are trying to restore democracy. And on the website, marchonharrisburg.org, I'm going to link to it in the show file for the podcast so people can click right over. But you note that Pennsylvania has been declared the 45th most corrupt state in the country. What are the metrics for that honor?
Well, there are a bunch of different metrics. I believe it's over 11 or something different metrics. And when we're later on in the show, we're going to bring in Michael Pollack, who's the specialist in Pennsylvania democracy. He'll walk you through those rankings and also the other rankings on things like gerrymandering. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason why I'm here in Pennsylvania. really, you know, people talk about North Carolina and Texas as the places where they're trying to bring democracy back to the 1950s. But Pennsylvania is right up there, and it deserves the notoriety of being such a hotbed for anti-democracy policies.
Yeah. And gerrymandering is quite a scourge, and it is nice to see that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which is dominated by elected Democrats, has ordered new congressional district maps drawn for the current upcoming election cycle. But you're working on a long-term fix to gerrymandering. Do I have that correct?
Correct. While this Supreme Court or the state Supreme Court decision is a good step in the right direction, there's no question that these maps coming out of the court issued maps are significantly more fair than the previously gerrymandered Republican maps. It's not the end goal, because, you know, the only solution is to do what California did, which is to take the power to draw the maps out of the hands of the politicians. Because, you know, in 2 years, there's going to be another redistricting cycle, and then we could be in for the exact same thing. Politicians will always try and manipulate the lines to, you know, at minimum, assure, you know, party leadership has safe seats, or, you know, those who curry favor with party leaderships. And so that system just doesn't work anymore. People aren't ready to accept that. We know that there's an easy way to rig the lines. So the only way to deal with it is just to take the power out of their hands. And that's,
Adam,
what we're fighting for.
I want to underscore that you're working on developing a nonpartisan approach to correcting gerrymandering. And that's something I truly applaud, because while currently the excess of gerrymandering can be laid at the feet of Republican trifecta states, where both houses and the governorship are controlled by Republicans, we know that when the Democrats had similar control in the past, that they used it to wield gerrymandering to their favor. And here in California, one of the few legacy items that Arnold Schwarzenegger can claim credit for during his stint as governor is that he helped pass a ballot measure that created our independent redistricting commission. And as I shared with you and Frankie when you were here in October, I believe it has worked really well, and that the lines have been drawn fairly based on appropriate factors, and never allowing a legislator to pick his or her own voters.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And when I've been going around speaking, you know, California is often one of the ones that I, you know, the examples that, you know, both I and Michael Pollack, who you'll talk to, the executive director of Marsh & Harrisburg, that, you know, we together cite as what we're striving for. And actually, this bill in Pennsylvania is looking to build on the California model and even improve it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are a bunch of different safeguards that they implemented into the bill. So it's really exciting. And it really helps, you know, the efforts here in Pennsylvania and across the country that we have a model off of which to build.
Yeah.
So, you know, California developing such a strong model really does help other states. And that's the key, right, of this democracy movement, is that all of these states that are, you know, passing policies, and you can look at it in isolation, but in reality, each time a state pushes democracy forward, yes, it only affects theoretically the citizens in that state, but it also helps those of us who are fighting in other states as well, because it gives us a model and it gives us inspiration for the work here.
And Adam, I mentioned that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court that ordered the new interim congressional district lines is dominated by elected Democrats. And I'm also opposed to the election of judges, particularly to state Supreme Courts. We've seen throughout the South that Karl Rove and his buddies packed the courts from Texas to Alabama to Mississippi. These are issues that I have grave concerns about, because we need courts that are above partisanship.
Yeah, and the assault on our democracy in terms of the hyper-partisanship of the courts is a serious problem. A couple weeks ago, I was at a conference, a big conference in New Orleans called Unrig the System, and there were about 1,500 people there, scholars, activists, and just people interested in our democracy. And one of the very last speakers said, you know, it may be an unpopular position, but Americans elect too many different people for office, that, you know, things like sheriff and judges probably shouldn't be up for election. And I'm not an expert in terms of that, but there's no question that you know, when we view the courts in a partisan lens, we have a serious problem. That's not how our law should be decided or interpreted, rather.
Now, Adam, when I met you back on your book tour in October, and I want to add a comment here that you and Frankie are the only guests who've ever come to my secret studio via public transportation. And it's not that easy to get here taking the bus from Berkeley. You really do live according to your own principles, and that's something I truly respect. Talk a little bit about how you're implementing some of the things that you wrote about in Daring Democracy.
Well, I mean, you know, this barnstorming is a great example of that because, you know, what we're doing, I mean, Michael and I had this idea that if we really want to claim to organize in the state of Pennsylvania, then we need to go across the state. We can't just be working where we have the biggest base in Philadelphia. That's not how you organize a statewide campaign. And so we said, well, why don't we just spend an entire month going across the state from Philly to Erie? And Erie, I didn't realize this, but is right on the border of Canada, All the way out there. We drove about 7+ hours to get there. And to Scranton, to York, Pennsylvania, to Harrisburg, to all of these places. And keep in mind that we're not just going to liberal, you know, counties. We're going to deep red pockets of Pennsylvania. I mean, we're going to places where, you know, we did an event yesterday or 2 days ago in York, Pennsylvania. And York is where Scott Wagner is the representative. And for your listeners who don't know who Scott Wagner is, he's a state senator who's currently challenging the governor, Tom Wolf, the Democrat. And Scott Wagner is very conservative into these territories. And we are, you know, these counties, and we are talking about democracy. And there was actually someone wearing a Scott Wagner shirt at one of our events. And you want to know what? Despite what we may think that, oh, well, this person was probably there to agitate, this woman was incredibly interested in what we had to say and was nodding her head during our entire speech. So we're giving talks about how our democracy is broken. I'm talking about Daring Democracy. Michael is talking about what's happening in Pennsylvania. And we're outlining positive steps forward because everyone knows the system is broken. And what we're trying to do is give people concrete steps to move it forward. And so at the end of every event, after we talk, after we explain both the problem and the solutions, we're asking people to step up and form democracy hubs. That people who are there, we already know who's there who cares about democracy. And so we're asking them to join the fight, self-organize, and get ready to do more activism in the future. This isn't just a single event. We want this to be the start of a growing movement in Pennsylvania. That's really the vision here.
And after you complete these events, I understand you're going to conduct a march to the state capitol in Harrisburg?
Well, we actually already did that. We call it the 3.0 campaign.
Okay.
The first campaign was a march from Philadelphia to Harrisburg. I actually was on that march, and Frankie came down actually for a little bit of it. And it was about 100 miles over 9 days, and it involved civil disobedience in the Capitol as well. And then the second campaign was a march from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, to Harrisburg. And this time around, we're not marching. We're driving across the state. But there will certainly be more marching to come.
Well, and also there's a cost to driving the big state of Pennsylvania because it's mostly turnpike with tolls, right?
there's definitely cost to do this. This is not cheap.
Yeah.
But again, it's worthwhile to be talking with people while, you know, outside the choir. And I have to say, what's amazing here is that, you know, we're doing stops at all the UU churches. So it's amazing how, you know, the goal of Daring Democracy in some respects was to get it into the hands of those who could use it for positive change. And so when it was selected as the UU Common Read of the Year, Michael and I put out the feelers to the churches in Pennsylvania, and they stepped up and organized this tour. So it really was kind of a bunch of different people coming together and using it as a roadmap for trying to turn anger into positive change.
Now, Adam, you're there at a church in Westchester, and it's just a few minutes before your event is going to begin. Give our listeners a quick sketch of what the crowd will experience there this evening.
Well, so what it's going to experience is we're currently sitting in a room, a big, it's called a chapel space, and there's probably seating for about 120 plus people here. And, you know, we're getting ready. The tech people are setting up the microphones, and there's you know, there's definitely a buzz going on here trying to make sure everything is ready. And so when the event starts, I will begin speaking, and I'll give an outline of our, of Daring Democracy and kind of go through what we talked about the last time I was on your show, Peter, where, you know, describing this anti-democracy movement and just how deliberate the assaults on our democratic institutions have been. And then I'll go into the positive messaging of that there is a democracy movement and there are policies that we can enact to fix the problem, and really kind of go through those two things. But towards the end of answering something that has been on my mind for a couple months now, which is that I don't think resistance is enough, that I've been worried that all of our actions as kind of branded as the resistance is not enough. Because it leads us to burnout and it doesn't get us to the root cause and it's not articulating a vision moving forward. And so my point when I go to these events is really to make the case that that the fight for democracy can unify us across issues, prevent burnout, and really help us articulate a moral vision for which we're fighting for.
And Adam, not all the people who identify as part of the Trump resistance identify as Democrats, but
exactly.
To a certain extent, the idea of resistance to Trump has been co-opted by the Democratic Party, and they're trying to use it to keep their base activated. At the same time, I think the leadership has been pretty lame in offering a real path forward to fighting the battle for campaign finance. They pay lip service to dealing with Citizens United as a fundraising tool, but I don't see any active movement to amend the Constitution or take other steps to neutralize the Citizens United decision. And so fundamentally, I don't believe the Democratic Party is positioning itself to try to reform democracy. I fear that they're just using the resistance tag as a marketing tool to rally people to vote for Democratic candidates in the primary and in November.
That's I think that, you know, for the most part, that's right. And that's why it's so important, or at least that I view kind of my talk is so important, because what I'm trying to say is that, you know, it's not just about resistance, that we have to take it upon ourselves to develop the moral framework and the kind of the vision of the future, that we need to be the ones articulating it. We need to be the ones building a movement, because that's where the change is going to come. That it's not just enough to resist. It's not just enough to fall back into party structures, that we need to build a movement, that is the pathway forward. And it has to center itself around the root, which is our broken democracy. And that doesn't mean giving up our issue passions, as we discussed before. It doesn't mean not stepping up to fight racist immigration bans or to protest the repeal of healthcare, because all that is integral to democracy as well, that we can all have the things we care about and fight for democracy too. But it's the fight for democracy that is the root, mm-hmm. That's where we have to focus our core energy in some respect, as well as our, you know, all the other things that we care about.
And Adam, to what extent is the March on Harrisburg and this new activist movement in Pennsylvania inspired by or modeled on the Moral Mondays efforts of the Reverend William Barber in North Carolina?
Well, I think there are two points to this, and then I think this is also a great segue for me to quickly grab the executive director of March on Harrisburg, who himself is a religious leader. He is a young rabbi, and his name is Michael Pollack. And so quickly, before I let him draw him into the conversation, I'll say that there are two main ways that March on Harrisburg relates to what Reverend William Barber did with Moral Mondays in North Carolina. And the first is the understanding that we're all in this together, and that if we're going to win this, we have to embody fusion politics, that we're bringing people together in the fight for democracy. And it doesn't matter if you're on the left or the right of the political spectrum, you have a place in this movement. You have a place as long as we are fighting for a moral vision for Pennsylvania. And the other thing that I'll say that has in common is that Reverend William Barber put out a big call recently for the Poor People's Campaign. And I'll let Michael talk about this, but it's this big effort across 33 states this upcoming summer, a season of resistance. And March on Harrisburg is on the steering committee of the Poor People's Campaign in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So there are many ways in which the thinking of you know, Reverend Barber is integrated into the DNA of March on Harrisburg.
Yeah, it's really so impressive what they've done there.
Absolutely. So with that, I want to introduce you, Peter, to Michael. Michael, this is Peter.
Rabbi Pollack, it's a pleasure to meet you. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much for having us on.
Well, this is exciting. I'm glad to see people fighting for democracy in the cradle of democracy. And I'd like to begin, Michael, by asking you to give us just a quick thumbnail on why Pennsylvania ranks 45th in the United States in terms of its democratic principles and policies.
Yeah, Pennsylvania, we are 45th across 11 metrics of democracy, and we are 49th in gerrymandering. We are one of 10 states with no limitations on gifts from lobbyists to state legislators. We are a state with no private campaign finance limits for statewide races.
Really?
We have many, many corruption problems here.
Wow. I didn't know you had no campaign finance limits. And you can just lavish gifts on a legislator without limit. Is that right?
Absolutely. And you know, I was in a meeting a few months ago with a freshman representative, and he kind of really laid out what it means to walk into Harrisburg. And when you walk into Harrisburg, there are two paths in front of you. You can choose to side with corruption, or you can choose to have your integrity. And this representative was saying that every Saturday he sees an executive of Comcast, and he knows that he can ask that Comcast executive for $100,000 and that he'll give it to him. And they'll both know what that means. And what that means for the representative is an open door policy to Comcast for the rest of his career. And it also means, though, that what he can do is take that money, dole out $500 here, $1,000 there to all of his colleagues' campaigns, buy himself enough favor, and after a few cycles, he could become the Speaker of the House and then a U.S. Senator, and who knows. And he said, you know, that's how Pennsylvania works. You show up on day one, there's two roads in front of you. Which one are you going to walk down?
Now, I've always heard of the legendary Democratic machine that was run by Rizzo in Philadelphia for many years. But I didn't really have any idea from here in California that the Republicans have been operating a kind of brazen political machine of a similar nature.
It's pretty brazen on all sides out here. The Democrats certainly try to hold, maintain, and increase their power, and Republicans are very effective at that as well. We have currently a state legislature. It's a double red state legislature, so Republicans control both chambers. And they have a supermajority in the Senate. So it's a pretty Republican-dominated government at this point. But what we know is that Pennsylvania is essentially a 50-50 state. It's a swing state. It's a purple state. And so right now, the rules have been rigged so that power is kind of swung to the red side. And we're just trying to unrig those rules so that we can get back to being a purple state with good productive conversations, good productive debate, and really trying to find middle ground, common ground, and compromise.
I'm looking at your website, and I know one of your goals is to address the gerrymandering issue on a permanent basis. You even have a countdown of 127 days for the campaign that you have launched. And in talking to Adam Eichen a moment ago, I was describing the independent redistricting commission that we have here in California, and it has made a remarkable difference because we know that the map lines were not chosen by legislators looking at detailed computer maps to select exactly the voters they wanted to represent. And so we have a fairer system where there are actual challengers to incumbents, and occasionally an incumbent even loses now. And so we are seeing a kind of seismic shift in the, you know, layout of politics here in California, and I'd love to see that be implemented in Pennsylvania as well.
That would be phenomenal. That's our goal, is to really take the power out of the hands of the legislators, out of the hands of the politicians, because right now they just swing the power balance back and forth, and the people who lose out every time are we the people, because while they're playing their partisan tribal trench warfare games, we're the ones left out of the equation.
And Peter, if I can quickly jump in here, I want Michael to explain why there is a countdown clock on their website about gerrymandering, because I think this is really important for your listeners.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so the recent – everything that's been going through the courts right now and the new maps that we have are really temporary fixes.
Right.
And they will affect the 2018 election and the 2020 election, but not beyond that, because we haven't fixed the process. It'll still be in the hands of politicians. And both parties, the leadership across the aisle, has been very clear with us about their intentions. I met with the Democratic staffer in the minority leader's office who literally gerrymanders the maps. He's the Democratic gerrymander in Pennsylvania. And he said at one point, he broke down and had a moment of honesty. And he said, "When people ask me what I do for a living, I tell them that my job is to destroy democracy. And I don't feel good about that,
wow.
But that's what I say, because I look across the aisle and I see crazy people. And when I get a chance in 2021, I am going to draw as many of them out as I possibly can." And so I said to him, I quoted the columnist Thomas Friedman to him, who said, "Being an American voter is like being the unwanted child of two constantly divorcing parents, and that they need to just give up this power. They need to disarm."
And Michael, how do we change the system? Because I think this is key.
We change the system through a constitutional amendment to create an independent, nonpartisan citizens commission, pretty similar to what you've done out in California.
And do you have an initiative process so the people can do that, or is the legislature the only possible path?
We do not have a ballot initiative process here in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And so we need to work through the state legislature, and it's a constitutional amendment that takes two sessions to pass. So we need to do this by June 30th, 2018, again in the legislative session of 2019 and 2020, and then it goes to the ballot. And then we'll have the independent commission set up in time for the 2021 round of redistricting.
So we only have a couple months to pass this, or otherwise we have to wait another 10 years.
Yeah. So, Michael, you're a young rabbi. You're under 30 years of age. What made you decide to use your moral base as a religious person to address these secular and political issues?
This may not be a popular thing to say on a progressive radio station, but
go ahead.
I see very little separation between biblical morality and our current social setup. If you read the Bible closely, you'll see that what the prophets are talking about are matters of social justice. They're talking about the widow and the orphan. They're talking about just governance. They're talking about mercy and compassion in the public square. And so I don't really see a separation between my work as a rabbi and my work in Harrisburg in the state legislature, because it's really about just having the face-to-face encounter in our public square, having the open lines of communication so that we can be responsible for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And what corruption does, whether it's gerrymandering or unlimited gifts or campaign finance, is that it blinds us to each other. It makes so that we're separate, and so that we can't actually talk to each other, and we can't actually find common ground and cooperate. It's written in Deuteronomy, "Do not take a bribe, because a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and distorts the words of the righteous." And so I look out at our society, and the eyes of the wise are blinded, and the words of the righteous are constantly distorted, and our political system is set up that way. And so to really approach a world of more justice, it's essential to first really go after how we make decisions.
And Peter, if I can quickly hop in here and just brag about Michael for a bit, because I really want to tell your listeners the story that just made me feel such kinship with him back in May during the first March on Harrisburg action, a march from Philadelphia to Philadelphia to Harrisburg, that Michael was just then finishing. He took 2 weeks off of the last semester of his rabbinical school, really right before he graduated, and he was fielding offers, job offers for what he wanted to do next. And he had a couple offers at Hillel's, at universities.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, he ultimately said he turned them down because for him, being a rabbi meant being a community organizer, that for him, being a spiritual leader was about being a community organizer and doing the good work, getting his hands dirty. And for me, that shows the kind of person he is. So he's going to look at me and be angry that I'm bragging about him, but I really do think it gets to the core of Michael. And it's such a privilege for me to be able to work with him and come down here.
Let me just say for my part, Michael seemed a little concerned about, just expressing this to me. I am a secular agnostic, but what I truly value is people who have a moral base to their lives and live accordingly. And we have far too many hypocrites of many religious stripes, from Christian to Catholic to Jewish, who serve in the public sphere today, who don't honor the fundamentals of their religious culture or faith. And so I can only applaud you for consistency and for rejecting hypocrisy, Rabbi.
Thank you. And it's a fascinating part of the job when I lobby. You know, Pennsylvania is a pretty religious state. And so it's always interesting to go into especially the religious rights offices and have these conversations from a foundation of morality and a foundation of religious thought. And it's really a productive place to have these conversations. There was once a state rep who said to me, you know, I see you're a rabbi, I respect this, and I strongly believe in my own Judeo-Christian values, and I can only take care of my own behavior. I can't be responsible for what other legislators are doing regarding corruption. And it was a great moment to just say, no, that's not what your Judeo-Christian values are. You know, the Bible has been summarized in the words of Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel as some are guilty, but all are responsible. And so creating that feeling of responsibility through language of faith, through the vocabulary of faith, it's highly effective in Pennsylvania.
And of course, we're going through, you know, our whole barnstorming tour is through the Unitarian and Universalists. So, you know, we're really hitting up religious communities here, that this is, you know, if we're going to win this, it's going to be on the back of a very diverse, intergenerational, interfaith movement for democracy.
Well, yeah. And I observe a lot of activism among Universalists and the Episcopalians, the Presbyterians. There are a lot of great religious-based activist groups in this country, and I'm always very happy to align with them. Now, we're getting close to the start time of your event, and I would like to talk to Rachel Murphy, who's there with you, if we can bring her into the conversation.
So here she is. This is Peter. Let me introduce you to Rachel. Rachel is one of our organizers.
Hi, Rachel. Peter. Thanks for being with us today, and thanks for your activism. Tell us what it is that drives you to get involved in the March to Harrisburg and trying to root out corruption in Pennsylvania.
Well, I actually have quite an interesting story, because I was a freshman in college when I was diagnosed with autoimmune disorder called multiple sclerosis. Not sure if you've heard of it.
I have.
And, you know, of course, when I was diagnosed, I thought the worst part is going to be what comes with the diagnosis, the symptoms, you know, just learning how to be a person with MS. It's, you know, quite a lifestyle change. But I quickly learned that the hardest part was dealing with the insurance companies and dealing with my doctors and having to get prior authorizations cleared, and felt like that shouldn't have been the hardest part of being diagnosed. So I quickly found out that money in politics was the culprit. Not being represented was the culprit. It was an unfortunate discovery, but it did drive me to get involved in my local politics and learn more about my own state's politics, because I had never been political before.
That's very interesting. And where do you live in Pennsylvania, Rachel?
I live in Philadelphia.
You're in the Philly area. Okay. And as you were growing up, did you pay attention to politics and government at all, or was it just kind of a lot of background noise that the grown-ups were supposed to take care of?
That is exactly what I thought. I thought that, you know, me, myself, I wanted to study science, and I would learn science, and I would be an expert in it. And I figured the people in politics, you know, chose the same path. Their own path. They chose to get involved with politics and learn all about it and make sure we're represented. But quite the opposite happened, or I realized quite the opposite was true, that they were there for their own interests.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm really thrilled to see this level of activism among young people. I'm an aging baby boomer. I was active in the movements against the war in Vietnam and in favor of civil rights in the 60s and 70s. And since then, it's been pretty spotty. There was some rallying of young people against the Iraq War when Bush was in office. But from my perspective, We've seen people kind of, the young people in particular, who got activated, for example, by Bernie Sanders' campaign in 2016. You know, often it's a heat of the moment kind of situation. And you're getting involved in very, you know, long-term projects here. Rabbi Pollack explained that to amend the Constitution in Pennsylvania, you're going to have to pass the independent redistricting bill in two successive legislative sessions. And so this is not something that's click-based activism. You're going to have to really put in a lot of hard work talking to average people in order to build the grassroots pressure to get these measures passed, and passed twice.
Yeah, it's definitely a long game. We have a game plan. You know, it's not just, oh, we went on a march because we are upset. It's, we went on a march, and that's just a part of it. It's a whole organizational system that we've got going on to try to really dismantle, you know, these systems of oppression coming in the form of our government not representing us.
And Peter, I'll just quickly say that they, the March on Harrisburg folks, have lobbied 240 out of the 253 politicians in the state. I mean, they have done their due diligence. The you know, the politicians in Harrisburg, they know them. Mm-hmm. They know March on Harrisburg. You know, this isn't just exactly as you said, kind of, you know, clickbait activism. That this really is, you know, they're citizen lobbyists.
Yeah.
They're citizen lobbyists with a plan. And you know, they're, I mean, for me, they're so inspirational because it is a lot of young people who are getting involved for the first time, and it's older folks, and it's people coming together across normally the things that divide us. And so it's exciting. It's very exciting.
And Rachel, let me ask you if you could share an anecdote from somebody who you lobbied or a door you knocked on where you were successful in opening that person's mind to the need for reform in Pennsylvania. Can you give me an example from your work?
Well, one conversation I had that comes to mind was during our march, we stopped in communities and we talked to them, you know, what's going on here? What do you deal with on a day-to-day basis that has really been getting you down or, you know, is difficult in your life? And one of the areas we were in, they, you know, talked about basically, they used to be a coal, I believe, a coal town. I'm not sure what the name of them is, but that's how they grew as a town. They grew on this form of energy production.
Right.
And as soon as the coal industry left, you know, they were left behind too. As soon as they weren't, you know, means of making money, they were left. And we were able to draw the corruption connection to them not being represented and, you know, them not being able to really talk to their representatives about what they were facing in their community. They began to realize, you know, maybe this whole money and politics and gerrymandering thing does affect us.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a thing to talk about. It's it's very real. They face it every single day.
And Rachel, what else is on your personal agenda that really, you know, you want to see change besides gerrymandering and the gift and campaign finance laws? Are there other issues that you think desperately need reform in your state?
I think that, you know, because of my diagnosis, I have a real strong attachment to healthcare and healthcare reform. It's really upsetting to see people suffering from such a terrible diagnosis to have to deal with our current healthcare. It's really upsetting.
Yeah. Well, I hope that you will take that on, and I hope you're successful. And I'm gonna wrap up here because I know your event is about to get underway there in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And Adam Eichen, I want to thank you for helping me put this episode together and introducing me to Rabbi Michael Pollack and Rachel Murphy. And I fully support what you're doing, and I hope you'll check back with me occasionally over the next few months. And particularly as we head to the deadline for the gerrymandering bill, which is 127 days away.
Absolutely, Peter. Thank you so much for hosting me and the March on Harrisburg folks. And, you know, I'll just say that it's so great that you're covering stories like this, because it's not easy for us to get press for something, you know, where a bunch of folks are fighting for democracy reform. even in a state like Pennsylvania. It's not easy, but you know, the fact that you're willing to cover this really speaks to both your values and your credentials as a journalist. So thank you so much.
All right, Adam. We'll stay in touch. Adam Eichen, coming to us from Westchester, Pennsylvania, and the March on Harrisburg activism group. Thanks for listening to this podcast about the March on Harrisburg. I welcome your comments. Email Peter at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.